So here we are, worldwide live through BBS Radio, back on the internet. Thank you, BBS, for making it possible. This is, as usual, a simulcast with a conference call. We have a bunch of people on the phone line over here. And every time you hear a ding, there's somebody else joining in. I have not seen an announcement email yet for tonight's call, so I don't know what's up.
Oh, let's wing it.
Yep.
Winging it with wind. That's interesting, doesn't it?
So, Don, you listened to the call last night?
No, I didn't.
What?
I did. Oh, which Don?
You, Don Harriman.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't. Did you hear it?
No, you didn't. No, I heard from somebody else who like on her just steady say also. And
Anunnaki was the subject, I think. Or?
Yes. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Percy, North Carolina.
Hello and welcome to the call, Percy. How are you?
Thank you, I'm fine.
All right. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Percy.
Hi.
Do I see Chris?
Yeah, you do.
Hello, Chris Blair. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good, good. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, glad to be here.
All right.
Hey, Chris, doesn't Memphis have a lot of, like, Egyptian, like, reproduction buildings and things there?
Well, you know, actually, we have the pyramid they built downtown as an arena. And now, actually, they're turning to the Bass Pro Shops, and it opens this month, which is, well, it's going to have some attractions. It's going to have a ride to the top, 32 stories to the top, and it's going to have an aquarium and all this. But basically, yeah, it's just a store, but kill, you know, how to kill animals. And,
I don't know if you're familiar, but in, like, southern Illinois, there's a whole bunch of, supposedly a bunch of, they found a bunch of Egyptian artifacts there, and if you look at the cities there, there's a number of cities that have Egyptian names. Sort of interesting.
Oh, yeah, isn't there is it Cairo?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's one of them.
Yeah, I was reading some of that, too. It is very interesting. Very interesting.
There's also that rumor about in the Grand Canyon, supposedly some kind of a, they call it the Egyptian temple or something.
They do have a Egyptian museum at the University of Memphis.
Let me welcome the caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Marshall, Lakeville, Illinois.
Marshall, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing very good. How about yourself there?
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Hi, Marshall.
Hello. Is this Marilyn or Patty?
It's Donna.
Oh, Donna. Hey, Donna.
Hey. Nice to hear your voice.
Good to hear you, too. It's good to hear everybody's voice.
Mm-hmm.
Is wind in yet?
Not yet.
Not yet.
They have made a discovery years ago. I read about they had found this whole community buried. They were very large people. They had double rows of teeth. They had red hair. And there was lots and lots of gold and Egyptian-style objects there. But one person discovered it, and immediately the government confiscated it. So you never heard too much more about it. But it was interesting. I would say that was an E.T. settlement of some sort that time.
Where was that?
Good evening, Rock Paul. Please say your name and location.
Hello, hi, it's Jim. I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Do you have brothers or sisters who have children?
Do I have what?
Brothers or sisters who have children?
Yes, I do. Both.
Then you're a Dutch uncle, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Aha! Well, don't get in Dutch with them, that's all.
Oh, boy.
Thank you, Jim.
I'm sorry. Oh, I just Wing just walked in. I'm sorry. I was just thinking of your being Dutch. And there were a lot of sayings: Dutch treat, Dutch uncle, my getting Dutch.
Well, in any case, Heise always gives everything a good name.
Yes, he does indeed. Who's that, please?
Morgan, sorry.
Oh, Morgan. Hello, Morgan May. How are you, Morgan? It's Jim.
I'm fine, Don. How are you?
Good, good, good. You sound good. Spiffy.
I feel a little better than I have recently, so I'm fine.
Oh, good, good. I knew that you were ailing, and I'm glad you feel better.
Thank you.
Who else joined in? We welcome you. All right. I welcome the silence.
Are Wynn and Terry around? Or?
I saw Terry show up, and then she dropped out again. Oh. Do you know about it, Jim? Sedona, Jim, you muted yourself.
Well, I want to take this opportunity to say thank you to you, Heist, for everything that you do for all of us.
Pleasure, but thank you very much, Donna.
I second that emotion.
Yeah, you do a great job,
Heist. Heist is Jim. I'm on Terry's code, so I have to mute. I have to do *6 because
right.
Wynn neglected to send out the the numbers for Monday night.
Don't worry, because as long as the mics are still open, you don't have to worry about it.
Oh, good. So I don't have to do, well, but Terry said better hit *6 to mute yourself or don't make any noise.
I'll take care of you.
Thank you so much.
We had more people join in, Bob?
I ordered the wellness wand from, was that you?
No, hello. Yeah, this is Jim.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Oh, did you call? You called today and ordered the wellness wand,
yeah.
Didn't you?
Yeah.
Yes. 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 Well, that's good. I'm very, very happy, and you'll receive it very shortly. And thank you for your order.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've had one before. I think someone liked it too much and kept it.
Well, anything we like too much, we keep.
Yeah.
All right. We welcome you. You want same location?
We're talking about the Giants.
What did you say, Marshall?
I said Donna was talking about the Giants at the beginning there. Big guy, red hair. They had found in Wisconsin not too long ago a grave that had 18 of them buried in it, and they all had the long red hair. They were all between 7 and 8 feet tall, with double rows of teeth. And they were found in one of the burial mounds.
Wow.
Welcome to the joined in. If you have a chance, please say a name and location.
Dan from Wisconsin.
Hi, Dan. Welcome to the call.
Thank you. Maybe, Dan, you've heard about that discovery of the grave with the 18 giants.
Hi, Dan. Yes,
hi.
In the meantime, I'm going to talk on BBS Radio. Thank you for being here. Having a little bit of a late start. We are just chatting around between the audience. Please hang
in. There's been a lot of discovery of giant skeletons, and I deeply suspect we had a lot of ETs living on this planet at one time.
Welcome back.
We talk about it coast to coast quite a bit.
Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, too.
You're welcome. All right.
Hello.
The dings are off.
Hello,
Wynn. Welcome to the call.
Hey.
And hello, Terry.
Hi.
We're going to do something really.
Hi, Wynn and Terry.
You sound in the distance a little bit, Wynn.
Is that better?
Yeah, a little better.
Okay.
So quiet.
We are going to do something really cool today.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
I think so, too.
how you know, Terry.
Because we both got something, I think.
Oh, you got something?
Yeah, at least so.
Uh-oh.
I can't find my hands that close.
Well, that means you don't have to.
I heard it last night.
Okay.
Can we get the recorder going, Wynn? So we go to deep.
Yes.
This conference is being recorded.
This is April 6, 2015. Wynn and Terry in Sedona. And Hives in the Galleria. And everybody everywhere. And hello to everybody on BBS on the internet. And
they had a bald eagle flying all over the thing.
Okay, I got this one.
Are you going to watch the game?
And another one. Did I mute you, Wynn? Oh, sorry, Wynn. Okay, you may speak again, Wynn. Sorry.
Oh, are you muted?
You are muted, yes.
Okay. See, Hive is the one that has the power here. Okay? If he doesn't like what I say, he mutes me. So, what we're going to do today is I am going to interview... I'm not loud?
You sound a little muffled.
Quiet. Should I call back on Skype?
Terry sounds great.
Terry,
did you want to...
I sound good.
Yeah, really good today.
Because I've got my other earphones on and my other mic, so maybe this will work.
You're rivaling Jim today for quality.
Is he better, Hives?
Yes.
Little.
Am I better?
Yes.
He's still a little low.
But now all the lines are open. Are we going to mute the lines, or you want to keep it open?
I'll keep them open for just a moment. But am I better? Should I call back on Skype?
It's okay.
Because now
I'm wondering if we should do what I have first, see, a car was coming through, and I think maybe I could bring that through, and it's short, and then you could go on. But I don't want to lose it here.
Okay, I'm going to mute everybody.
All callers are muted.
And Terry, now you're almost too close to your microphone.
Okay, I'm holding it.
Perfect.
Okay.
So, Terry, shall I call in the light? Okay, let's just do
well,
it. Okay,
let's just do it because I'm too. She says call in the light.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect Terry, myself, and everyone here. Any negativity be taken to the highest realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe, through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the solar system, through the outer energy fields of planet Earth, through our bodies, and into the center of the Earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls, and we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us, and we create a protected space only the positive has access to. Anything not of that nature must leave now, and I turn it over to Terry.
Thank you. This is Carla, and I love you all. And it brings tears to my eyes to be able to greet you here. Jim is wonderful. And all the people sending cards and flowers, I love them, each and every one. It is not quite what I thought. It's the hardest part is a lot of people can't hear me. But Don can hear me. And Don is magnificent. And that's all I have for now. I hope to see many people at the Going Away party. And it makes me sad to leave you with the not voice of mine. And I want you to know I love you all.
Carla.
Okay. But
can I ask Carla a question? Ask her if she'll accept a question.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Know, since sooner or later, we're all going to drop our bodies, could you share how it feels not to have a body?
It is more lighter, and I have my light body, and I can get around by walking or by motion. And that's all I'm this. And that's what I said before about the difference in how and communicating. And I love you. I love you all. That's all she wishes at this time, although it's a yearning to see more. But this is a good start.
Okay. Can we just say hello to Don as well and thank him for all he's done?
You will relay. I will relay, but okay. That's all.
Hello, Don. And anytime you want to come by, we love you, and
I don't want to strain this, it's very delicate here. So I wish to leave it, but for now, this is me, Cherry. It's like she's signed off, okay?
Okay.
She says it's okay. She will relay to Don. She is relaying it to Don.
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Okay, that's all.
All callers are unmuted.
All right, guys. That's the end of the call. What can I do after that? All right.
This is a wonderful surprise.
Yeah. So, Terry, did she come knocking on your door earlier or what?
Well, it's like I was sitting here before the call, and she was aware that...
All callers are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
She was aware that there was going to be the call, and she's been trying to speak to some people that can't hear. So she thought maybe Terry can hear, and Terry can give a message to everyone. And she misses you, and... she was very clear, she was no fogginess about her, like ghosts sometimes have fogginess. It's like she was so clear, just a total clearness and very aware, and was sort of kind of working it out how it she might be able to get a message through me, because I brought some messages through before from people. She says, thank you. She's very aware, very clear, very light.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, let's see. What was I planning to do now? All right.
Well, hey, Wynn, you might be able to continue doing the Law of One Made Simple sessions.
We'll work that out. My great idea today was I'm going to interview you. Now, people don't know who's going to get interviewed. So let me ask a couple people if they'll let me do it. And I actually think some of you will think you're really shy, and you'll think, oh, my God, I hope he doesn't interview me. But actually, it's a great thing to let yourself talk and learn. You know, you can talk about yourself, and it's okay. So let me give a shot here and say, Don Herman.
Yeah, I don't really want to be interviewed today.
Okay.
Unpleasant day. Maybe some other time.
Would you like to do it tomorrow? Try it.
Maybe some other time.
Get your courage up, okay? Now let's see here. How about Jim would really like to be interviewed, I'm sure. Hang on a second. Jim. Hello, Jim.
Are you talking about me, Jim?
I'm talking about him, Jim.
Well, it could have been callers, Jim.
No, he's not here. Jim, tell you
would you
like to be interviewed, Jim?
Oh dear. Oh dear. Then I would. If you interviewed me, then I'd have to lie excessively.
Well, just tell us when you're lying, and it's okay.
I think there are far more important people on this call who may enjoy being interviewed. You know, I have so much to hide, it would be a shame to bring it all out at this time.
Well, you know what? I think everyone has a unique story, and you don't have to be a celebrity. You don't have to be. We learn from each other. We learn from each other. Why don't you give it a try, Jim? At least you're not shy.
No. Shy is not an aspect of my personality.
Like where were you born?
Where was I born?
Yeah.
Or when was I born?
Where? Don't start lying.
I was born in New York City on September 11th. 9/11 of all days, but I came first, 1946.
And what were your parents like? What kind of house did you live in?
I lived with my mother, my aunt, my grandmother, and my grandfather. My mother and my father divorced when I was, maybe six. He passed away in... he was born in 1901 and died in 1959, so he was merely 48 years old. In 1949, I was just turning 13. So I lived with my mother, her mother, her sister, my aunt, and my grandmother's husband, my grandfather.
And when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew
I didn't have much choice when. Before I was 5 years old, I don't remember much, or as much as anyone under the age of five. I think the age of five is the age of enlightenment as far as human beings are concerned. You start making sense of things and so forth. But my mother was a Ziegfeld girl in show business. She was a specialty tap dancer in the 20s and the 30s. And she was very much, if everyone remembers the name Tallulah Bankhead, a very feisty woman, fine actress, the daughter of a senator, Senator Bankhead. She passed years ago. But she was my mother's contemporary. And my mother had that same gutsy sense of humor. But she wanted to make sure that if she had any kid, that son or daughter would go into music. Of course, in those days, as some of you may remember, when you're a kid, you don't have much choice what to do. I was 5 years old, and my mother said, "Guess what, Jimmy?" And I said, "What's that, Mom?" And she said, "You're going to be a great pianist." And I thought to myself, "Oh, this is the biggest crock of BS I've ever heard in my life." I didn't say it quite like that, but I'm saying it now. So then the piano teacher came. He was a much older man, a Russian. I could hardly understand what he said, what he was saying. And I started playing piano when I was five. And the end of that story is, I think, very cute. My mother was a great guide to me all my life. When I was 15, 10 years after I started playing, I was very, very upset with practicing piano. And I said, "Mom, I don't want to play anymore. The guys want me to play ball. They think I'm a sissy." And I kept on going. She said, "Jimmy, sit down." And I knew something was wrong, or I was in trouble for something. I said, "Okay." I sat down. She said, "Jimmy, you've got good talent. And if you keep practicing, I assure you that when you're in your 20s and you play piano at parties, you're going to get all the pretty girls." That's verbatim what my mother said. And you know, to this day, I just played yesterday in Scottsdale at a very exclusive place, which I was very pleased and proud to play in. But you know what's true? Even today, when I play piano, I get all the pretty girls. Now, it may just last for as long as the piece lasts, but it's lovely, and I keep thinking of my mother saying that when I was 15, and that's quite a few years ago.
Musicians definitely have the edge, don't they?
I'm sorry, something's wrong with his phone. Wait. Okay. Go on, so would you say that again, please?
I said musicians definitely have the edge.
I don't know what you mean by edge. Edge over what, and edge from whom?
The edge with women.
Oh, that I don't know. I think everyone, myself included, is always a little bit in awe and always a little bit fascinated by people who can do things that either they cannot do, or there's something about bodily movement, the moving of fingers, a runner, the legs. There's something about bodily movement that could practically enchant other people who don't move that way. Maybe we all want to secretly be something we're not and could never be. I tell you the truth, all my life, you wouldn't believe this, but all my life, piano was part of my life. It's what I do. But you know what I always thought of being? I always wanted to be a tennis player, and I never, never played tennis. So you see, the moves, I love to watch tennis. Professional tennis is just is terrific for me. It's exciting, and but I don't know what they're doing. And perhaps that is one of the things that enchants me, is that sometimes things are better off if you don't know what other people are doing. And just leave it as something you cannot do. Don't ascribe to it. And just watch other people for doing something well.
and just say, gee, I'm glad to know that person. Or, gee, what a wonderful thing he or she is doing.
Now tell me, when you graduated high school, did you immediately go into college?
No. No, I graduated high school at 18. I didn't begin college until I was 24, 1970. I went for a bachelor's at a music school, graduated in 74, but then I immediately went to my master's, and I graduated that in 75. Then once again, I took about 6 years off to learn some of what life is about, and I didn't start my doctoral studies until I was in my 30s.
And where'd you go to school for your doctoral?
In New York University.
NYU?
Yeah.
Wow. So you were at NYU when all the 60s and 70s were happening, right?
No. No, I got into NYU. I got my doctorate in 83. I entered in 80. Took me 3 years, mostly just writing the dissertation. The coursework took a year. That was nothing. Anyone who sits on their rear and assimilates the material can do coursework. It's writing the thesis, which is very tough to do. Every word is scrutinized.
And you were taking musicology, correct?
I'm sorry? No, music education.
So you were going to be a music teacher, yes?
I had been a music teacher since I started teaching piano when I was 16. Quite a few years. So it's half my life before I started teaching, taught all through my bachelor's and my master's, especially piano. But then it was in my master's that at Columbia University Teachers College that I started doing music education. And I just loved the idea of getting in front of a class and helping to open their minds through discussion and to assimilate the material. I had forums, so I had all sorts of... It was very, very interesting. Then what was most interesting is after I got my doctorate, I was asked to stay on as an assistant professor of music education. And I had a course, Teaching Teachers How to Teach. And the course were all master's students who were coming in, all teachers, and from all over the world. Of course, everyone knows, of course, NYU, as well as other universities, are just melting pots of nationality as far as coming to school. I learned more than the pupils. I learned a hell of a lot more than the pupils. We all sat around and we talked about the way we taught. And these are people from Sri Lanka, from all through Europe, from Asia, South America. I tell you, my class were 32. I still remember now, 32 students, and I think only three of them happened to come from the same country. Everyone else were from all over the world. We all learned from each other by saying how we taught, what we taught, how we taught it. And it was fascinating. The most fascinating for me, I think that was the stage of my life that I actually learned the most was by teaching.
But I know you have done lots of interesting things this life besides teaching and music. Like, how did you go from being a piano teacher, teaching music, to starting a restaurant?
Well, in my early 20s, when I had the hiatus between graduating high school and going to college, and that was almost a six-year period, my mother figured it was time for me to learn something about Europe, to get some international culture, to become somewhat cosmopolitan. So she sent me off to private cooking schools. She wanted me to cook because she saw I had a gift, as she put it, in the kitchen. And so I went 6 months to a small private cooking school for preparation, presentation of food, of course, in Rome, and then I went for 6 months in Paris. And those were a tremendous 6 months for me. I just adored cooking. Cooking then is nothing like cooking now. You could use things then you wouldn't dare use now, or at least you'd be very careful about what you're using. And gourmet cooking, for instance, innards were a big deal when I was in school. Everyone loved tripe, brains, kidneys, all these hugely high in vitamin A, which is one reason why, excuse me, the last generation of the French suffered from gout so much, is because too much vitamin A can cripple you. It's something awful. And people just don't eat it today. If you mention these things in French, it sounds very nice, sweetbreads and everything, riz de veau. Sounds nice, yeah, but what is it? I still adore it, but it's so high in cholesterol that I don't dare have it for the rest of my life. And I just think back at the days I would just enjoy these with a lovely glass of dry white wine and French bread, crusty French bread, and oh boy. But things have changed. We eat more healthily, of course we do. But now, after I got my doctorate, what should I do? After I taught 4 years at New York University, I decided to open a restaurant, of all things, and I opened a bistro in mid-state New York in the Hudson River Valley area, and I had that for 6 years, and very successful again. My closest friend, Joe and I have known each other since 1960 in ninth grade, and we're fast friends still. We're brothers, of course. He made a very interesting point. He said, Jim, your whole life has been a vacation. You never settled down. You were married once. It didn't last long. You both in a friendly manner, you divorced because you realized that you got married for all the wrong reasons and divorced for all the right ones. What could be more amenable between two people if they both agree? So that's it. I just perhaps either I bore easily or I'm so motivated to want to learn new things. I would hope that's the main reason. So I go on to something else. I go on to what captures my imagination. One of the things that captured my imagination, which is something that Wynne and Terry should know, is that a little over 2.5 years ago, when Wynne and Terry gave me the opportunity to move here and help them with their work, it excited me. I thought, gee, this is I was in East Sandwich, Massachusetts, on the ocean. It was magnificent, of course. But I was that was coming to an end for several reasons, and I thought it was very serendipitous that Wynne wanted me to be down, and so I came to him.
Wait, Jim. If you're not going to tell the truth, don't include me in it, okay?
No, I must disagree with you. You are, to me, the sorest truth of all.
The sorest truth of all.
I have no reason to lie. I'm telling, you asked me questions, and I'm trying to answer to the best of my ability.
No, I don't mean that you're lying. You're not telling. It's kind of like, should we tell them what really happened, Jim?
No, I don't think we want to bore all our friends. And it was a simple romance that went wrong, and it was time to move on. We all have that experience when it's time to move on. It's just the people who move on successfully are the ones who know that it's time to move on.
Mm-hmm. We shouldn't tell them who the romance was with, huh?
Why don't you tell?
The romance was with girlfriend number one, who started our channeling.
DK.
And, DK, right. And, you know, I was actually pretty mad at Jim when I invited him to come here because DK had been involved in our work peripherally when she was in Alaska. And then when she hooked up with Jim, she dropped out. You know, she didn't participate anymore. And then 2 years later, she called me and said, Jim is really depressed. Mom kicked him out of the house. He's living in this house in East Sandwich with drug dealers and prostitutes. And he's on the couch, and he doesn't have a car, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. Could you call him and try to cheer him up? And that's how we ended up with Jim here, right? And, of course, when Jim first moved in, he didn't actually believe anything we're doing was possible. And Jim and I were driving each other crazy. And Terry kept saying, oh, but Jim is really an angel. He's just a little bit off right now, and we should help him. And, of course, then it came up that Jim was Jim doesn't totally believe any of this, but I'm sure Jim was Raymond.
Well, now, win. Don't say any of this. It's very hard to convert someone to another way of thinking or an ideology that one doesn't espouse from the first place. It takes time. 2.5 years is not enough time. I was born a Roman Catholic, and I rejected that when I was 13 or 14, only because of 1 year going to a Jesuit high school. And I just couldn't continue with the tenets that they were espousing. And I just did nothing for many, many years. I believe we have souls, and I believe that our souls pass after we pass, would they go on to something else. What it is, I don't know. Where it is, I don't know. How it happens, I don't know. But I feel this way. And thank God we live in a time that we can not only freely believe in what we believe in, to talk about what we believe in, but that we can actually believe it. It was in some people on this call right now, it's maybe they were children during World War II, there was a time in Germany that if you said this or that, you'd be put against the wall and that would be the end of it. We don't have that now. We have freedom of speech, and I think that's I think freedom of speech is the most God-sent luxury and beauty that we have in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, I mean that vociferously.
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 Thank you. I'm gonna play some of your music for everybody.
No, Wynn, don't do you. You've done that already. People know that I play piano. That's not necessary.
No,
please.
People love your music. Come on.
I would love to hear your music, Jim.
Music.
All callers are unmuted.
Tell me, guys, should I play some of Jim's music? What do you think?
Play the music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those two ladies who just spoke, I want you to know.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
I paid the two ladies who wanted to hear my music very, very highly in order to say what they said. So,
Hello. I'm Jim Lee, solo pianist, and I have here about 10 minutes of my favorite melodies, and I hope you enjoy them.
All right. Hang on.
All callers are unmuted.
Anybody?
Yay.
Good night.
Hey, yay. That was beautiful. That was great.
Good job.
What talent. All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Now, I want you guys to know, Jim, are you there?
Right here.
Jim.
Who was that guy? It was pretty damn good.
you were mostly improvising, weren't you?
Yes.
You know, Jim, I think you're an example of a privileged elite guy that's making good.
Thank you.
I don't know what to say to that.
No, I'm awestruck.
You're awestruck. Great. Thank you. Now, I do, you know, everyone is shaking in their shoes to say, uh-oh, I hope he doesn't call on me. So let's see. Okay, hang on. Who's there? Who should we call on? This is voluntary. You heard Don Herman. Gave up. Okay, now, do we dare call on Chris Blair? Chris Blair. Now, Chris is definitely a different kind of person. Let's see if Chris will. Hang on a second. Chris?
Yeah, I'm here.
What do you think? You want to let me interview you?
Sure, man.
Okay.
I got to disclose this. I'm a little bit hoarse because the pollen in Memphis is, I'm allergic to it. But
yeah,
I just want to let you know that.
You know, Chris is, I think you've been famous other lifetimes, okay? Right? I mean, you're actually very comfortable in front of the public, even when you're a screw-up. Okay. So, you're in Memphis, Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
And how are you feeling tonight? You know, Chris has been not well for quite some time.
Yeah, I'm all right, I guess.
You feeling better?
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
You feeling optimistic about your health?
Yeah, about my health. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I think, you know, a lot of it, you know, was of my own doing, I think.
Right. So, right now, you're kind of not working, right?
Right, yeah. I'm doing a little temp work, and I got some stuff working.
When you were growing up,
a workforce development network thing downtown where they train you, and but yeah, I'm just now trying to get everything together.
Now, when you were growing up, what did you want to be?
Well, for astronaut.
An astronaut?
Yeah. I loved everything, space, science fiction, all that.
You never wanted to be a rock star, did you?
Oh, well, you know, that kind of came later on when I was, like, in my teens. But, yeah, I mean, I took classical guitar at University of Memphis, and I started playing a little bit. But I got kind of off track. After I dropped out of college and wanted to travel around and party and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think you have an awesome mother. And
definitely.
And your mother is an example of unconditional love, isn't she?
Oh, most certainly.
And you know, you can do it. You know, no matter what you do, no matter how much you screw up, she is there for you, right?
Right.
I can tell. So,
well, you know, I kind of took care of her when I was a kid. You know, we did this one time when I asked a question, and you know, they said I kind of took care of her when I was a kid because she was an alcoholic when I was a kid. And,
your mother was.
Yeah. So I kind of took care of her. And plus, I had all my nightly visitations from scary things and all that kind of stuff. See, I grew up in Helena, Arkansas, and we grew up in a house that was already had spirits in it. And then we came to Memphis, and stuff kind of followed me. And there was one named Sarah who I kind of befriended. My mom used to always say, I don't always say, Sarah, is that you? And she was one of the more friendly ones, though. But yeah, I was real sensitive as a kid.
You know what, Chris? I just looked at the time, and it's, we're 1 minute over. Anything? So what would you like to tell everybody? I'm giving you a moment of fame.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. A car just went by.
I said, we got to cut this call because I'm a minute over. So this is your 30 seconds of fame. What would you like to tell everybody?
Let's see. Gosh, I don't know. I've just a little something about myself. I've really delved into some of the more 3D, darker sides of life, somewhat. You know, kind of like Charles Bukowski said. You know, when I was in my teens, early 20s, I was kind of just searching for something. So I was. Can I say something about what I did? Or, I was for the higher thing. I was, you know, I was to do a lot of psychedelics and all that.